Scott never raised his head, but he opened his right eye enough to look over at me.
You think I'm here to kill you?
To a T-Minus podcast for Murder at Avedon Hill. Murder at Avedon Hill is a podcast novel written and performed by the author. Hello and welcome back to the second T-Minus episode of the Murder at Avedon Hill podcast. My name is P.G. Holyfield. Last week's T-3 podcast was promo-heavy, with me talking a bit about myself, the background of The Land of Cairn, and about the novel itself. This week I'm focusing on a short story that doesn't have anything to do with The Land of Cairn fantasy setting. Still, I hope it'll give you a taste of my writing style and get you to come back for next week's T-minus episode. The story I'll be playing for you today is Death, Taxes, and Scott Sigler. I wrote the story for Scott Sigler, author of Earthcore, Ancestor, Infection, and his current podcast novel, The Rookie. I met Scott at DragonCon, and the story starts out as a recollection on the craziness that is DragonCon. The rest of the story plays on the distinction, or lack thereof, between Scott Sigler, the person, and Scott Sigler, the persona. The story only has three speaking characters, the main two being myself and Scott Sigler. My initial hope was that Scott would like the story enough to read his part himself, but Scott is a busy man, so I planned on reading his part as well. That is, until J.C. Hutchins decided to play along, and did a Scott Sigler impression that still makes me laugh when I hear it today. Scott dropped the story into his podcast feed last month. I got some great comments that have pushed me even further down this podcasting path. I love podcasting this story, and I hope those of you that have not heard it will enjoy it. And if you have no idea who Scott Sigler is, please take a moment to listen to this promo for his latest podcast novel, The Rookie.
He was raised to hate non-humans, taught how to kill the five alien races with his bare hands. But 19-year-old Quentin Barnes doesn't want to be a soldier. He wants to be a quarterback, the greatest to have ever played the game. And to be the best, he has to play the best. And the best teams are mixed species, with receivers that jump 25 feet into the air, linemen that bench press 1,200 pounds, and linebackers that literally want to eat you. In a league that spans light years, where organized crime runs every franchise, where games are fixed, rival players are assassinated, and football has become so brutal that stats not only track yards and completions, but dismemberments and death. Quentin Barnes must learn to lead a team filled with the same races he's been taught to hate. He'd better learn fast, because if he doesn't, he'll just wind up another statistic in the column marked Killed on the Field. The Rookie is a free weekly podcast novel by author Scott Sigler, creator of Earthcore, Ancestor, and Infection. Available now at scottsigler.podshow.com.
The story itself was recorded before I got my equipment, so I hope the quality of the audio is good enough for you guys. So here we go with Death, Taxes, and Scott Sigler. September 3rd, 2006. DragonCon, Atlanta, Georgia, 2:40 a.m. It had been a long day, and an even longer night, and the night wasn't over yet. Standing in the lobby of the Atlanta Hyatt, I couldn't help but stare at the remaining costumed folk sober enough to walk. Most of the costumes around me had seen better days. 8 elevator doors surrounded me, but all were closed tighter than Princess Leia's legs in a slave costume. A video screen in one corner indicated that at least 2 of the elevators were out of commission, and the rest seemed to move around the upper floors, only rarely making the trek down to the lobby. In the 11 minutes I had waited with over 40 other guests, only 2 cars had made it down to the lobby. A behemoth dressed as Kingpin took up most of one of these elevators himself, evoking a communal groan from the gathering crowd.
Jesus Christ.
God, you fat fuck.
You've got to be fucking kidding
me. Oh, for the love of all that is holy.
It would be at least another 10 minutes before I would get the chance to break Georgia fire codes by overfilling a glass-enclosed elevator. Out of the corner of my eye, down a short corridor to my right, I spotted two service elevators. I'm sure they require a key or a key card to operate, or else everyone would use them. A flash of metal caught my eye, focusing my attention on the side hall. The door to one of the service elevators had opened, and two maids entered it, pushing a cart full of towels and other toiletries. One of the maids stuck a finger out and appeared to push a button just out of view. A moment later, the elevator doors closed. It can't be that easy. I lost my view of that hallway as someone pushed me from behind. Laughter followed, erupting from the man's friends as they watched him slump to the ground behind me. A stench filled my nostrils, a mix of stale beer, body funk, and urine. Damn stormtrooper pissed himself. Fucking pitiful. Oh, fuck this, I said to no one in particular. I made my way through the crowd, receiving the obligatory, "Where the hell are you going?" comments from those believing I was trying to jump ahead of them in line. They were right, of course, but as I moved off to the right, away from the mass of geekdom and their precious passenger elevator doors, the bulk of the group quickly disregarded me. Those at the edge of the throng, near the point where I finally extricated myself, watched me more closely. But they were too close to the service corridor, and there was too much of an angle. Once I rounded that corner, I left their thoughts as quickly as the 10 spot it took to buy a drink at the hotel bar. They couldn't see the service elevators, only that I disappeared from view. If these weary few had still been able to see the two golden doors, I might have had company, and my covert op would have ended before it even started. I walked forward, doing my best to exude confidence, to appear as if I belonged in the service corridor. Two smaller hallways ran perpendicular to the corridor I was in, forming a T at the front of the two service elevators. I had already decided to turn down one of these side hallways if I encountered anyone. This may have only led me into further trouble, but it was still a plan. As it turned out, there was no need for worry. It was nearly 3 a.m. on Saturday night at Dragon Con. There were parties that had to be silenced. There were broken bottles and lamps that had to be cleaned up. Hell, there were toilets that had to be unclogged, I'm sure. The two maids that had just left the lobby in service elevator 1 were the only evidence that this area was used by the hotel staff. But moments later, my happiness ended. As I stood before service elevator 2, the metal doors slid open. A giant wearing a blue blazer, white shirt with an open collar and off-kilter striped tie stood before me, walkie-talkie in hand, surrounded by 6 uniformed members of the Atlanta PD. The SWAT team toted weapons at the ready. One of the men held a battering ram, and all wore full tactical gear. They loomed over me, all at least 6 feet tall and wearing helmets with reflective visors. I lost my focus on Blue Blazer Man, distracted by the reflection of my gaping mouth and multiple helmet visors. But then the man in the tie, Rock, the hotel's chief of security according to his gold name tag, lowered his radio from his mouth and stared me down. No one said a word. No one moved, including me. Rock continued his glare. I believe he was willing me to spontaneously combust on the spot. He then opened his mouth to spit acid on me, I'm sure. The sound of the elevator reaching the first floor emptied my overworked brain for a moment. The doors to service elevator 2 slid open. The car was empty. No SWAT team, and no hotel chief of security. I had not pushed the button for the car, but the doors had opened automatically, programmed to allow quick entry for the next load of hotel employees off to do their unappreciated work. The air of confidence I had tried to affect fled me as I blinked my eyes, making sure the elevator car was truly empty. I glanced down both side hallways, seeing no one. I looked behind me, towards the main elevator lobby, heard the din of the crowd still waiting for their coach to arrive, transportation to take them to their next party, or to a new friend's bed, or to their own. I only wanted to get to my own, tired and worn from the late-night party at the Hilton 2 blocks away. Inebriated, but far from the loss of urination control condition of the stormtrooper some 30 yards away from me, I sighed once and jumped across the gap that separated floor from elevator, a ritual never missed. I immediately moved to the side, hiding from view as much as possible. I pressed the 12 button for my floor and waited. Nothing happened.
Shit.
Was I wrong? Do I need a key after all? I scanned the wall, the control board, and saw a keycard slot. A card rested in the slot, and a blinking green light flashed above the reader. Even though the 12 button was already lit, I pushed the button again. I heard the distant whirring of a fan, a useless waste of energy in the heat of a September Atlanta night. Finally, the doors began to close.
Hold the doors, bitch!
Bitch. Being a man, and rarely referred to in the feminine, I hesitated. Was it security? If I was busted, I wasn't going to make matters worse by ignoring an order. But that voice. I know that voice. I threw my head to the side and observed the man running towards me. He was short, wore a black blazer with a white t-shirt, and was carrying a 20-ounce bottle of Miller Genuine Draft. And he was smiling the smile of the trickster. I threw my fingers at the door open button, or at least what I thought was the door open button. The door closed completely. I then realized I had confused the open and closed door icons as I always do. Fuck, I said, hitting the correct button this time. I heard a muffled, corresponding fuck from the other side of the elevator door. I kept hitting the button, willing it to work. The doors opened, and the smile that had changed into a snarl at missing the elevator morphed into a triumphant gleam. The man jumped in the car and spun around to face the hallway.
13, brother!
I reached out and pressed the 13 button. The voice had made me hesitate, but seeing his face had gotten me to move fast enough to reopen the door. Scott Sigler, author of Earth Core, Ancestor, and my personal favorite, Infection, had called me a bitch. I couldn't help but smile. Hey, Scott, you done for the night? Scott raised one brow, but his eyes still focused out the elevator doors. He appeared genuinely surprised that people recognized him.
Nah, heading up to Evo's. Shit, close the door!
His shout directed my gaze towards the main lobby.
Oh, crap!
I threw myself at the elevator panel, frantically hitting the closed door button. The front end of a centaur, most likely more naked than he had been when he left his room earlier that night, and two zombies were running for the door. The not-so-secret location of the service elevators was no more. As the closing doors reached the point of no return, Scott yelled out at two of the three men.
Zombies shamble! They don't run, you bastards!
The doors sealed with a thud. And then Scott turned to me, laughing the laugh reserved for old friends at a bar.
Fucking priceless!
He blinked twice and then focused on my face.
Wait, I know you!
Dragon Con's podcasting track was full of my favorite podcasters, and my main purpose for attending the con was to learn from them. Sitting in the front row of most panels for 2 days had played a part in his recognition of me. The open nature of the podcasters themselves had also gotten me invited to parties every night of the con, which had accounted for the rest. Yeah, I talked to you last night for about 45 minutes about the rookie.
Shit, that was you?
He reached out and popped me in the chest with the back of his hand. Something he had done twice the night before as he talked about his next podcast novel. From observations made the previous two nights, I had created an inebriation meter for Mr. Sigler. Talking with his hands in an animated yet controlled manner meant Scott was still somewhat sober. If his hands tended to fly above his head, below his waist, it meant he was beginning a trip down intoxication lane. If he spontaneously broke out in the course of the Wild Rover, well, that meant he was drunk. And if he began popping you in the chest, he was three sheets to the wind. Although, I hadn't been around him enough to be absolutely sure. He might strike out with a snap of his wrist just as often when sober.
So, are you heading up to the suite?
I had already decided to call it a night, but if Sigler was going up, I might have to reconsider. I was actually heading to my room.
Your loss, brother.
There was that gleam in his eye, goading me as much as his words. I hadn't had a chance to congratulate Scott on his consolation prize of being nominated for 2 Parsec Awards. So, I did so. The Parsec Awards were great, weren't they? I can't believe how much work Tracy put into that presentation. Sorry you didn't win. I was rooting for you.
Podcasting excellence in speculative fiction. I should have known.
Excuse me?
Fancy-ass words. Of course a blue-collar, violent-spewing, red-blooded American like me wasn't gonna win.
I couldn't believe it. I was hearing a Scott Sigler rant in person. His voice held that combination of righteous indignation and self-deprecating humor that was his signature. I often wondered how many fans out there took his rants seriously. I decided to play along. Too bad you had to go up against Patrick McLean. His style must have been a real favorite of the judges. Patrick had won 2 Parsec Awards that night.
That silky-voiced bastard.
So there's this vampire. Living in my attic. I mean, it might be some other kind of undead semi-human, but I'm pretty sure it's a vampire.
Freaking Irish parsec award-juggling finger-stabbing fucker!
My jaw dropped. Wow, that McLean impression was uncanny. Scott suddenly had an uneasy look on his face. The gleam had left his eyes, as if he was trying to figure out what he had just said. I was about to ask how he had mimicked Patrick McLean's voice like that when the elevator stopped. I looked at the floor indicator. We had made it to the 9th floor. Guess we didn't catch the express. We were about to get busted. I wasn't too upset. As long as they didn't remove us from the hotel, there had to be stairs we could use. There were only 3 more flights to get to my room, 4 if I decided to go to the party. But the doors did not open. I pressed my ear closer to the door, but couldn't hear anything from the outside. I turned to Scott, who had leaned against a handrail along the back wall of the elevator.
Great into the night, APG?
You remembered my name? This was getting weird. Scott must have seen a look on my face and pointed to my crotch.
Name tag, numbnuts.
I had forgotten all about the DragonCon badge hanging from my belt. Sorry. Of course, I've only had a few beers tonight, but for some reason, I'm not thinking very clearly. Scott snorted.
What a strange thing to say to someone on an elevator that appears to have gotten stuck. Press some buttons, would ya?
I reached out and pressed the 12 and 13 buttons again, even though they were still lit. Nothing. I pressed the door open button. Nothing. I pressed the 14 button. It lit, creating a nice row of 3 lights. But we remained in eerie silence. Should I press the alarm button? Scott had closed his eyes, leaning his head back against the back wall. He didn't answer my question. A story from Escape Pod popped into my head. I really don't know why. I chuckled, but something in the back of my mind still nagged at the edges of my consciousness. You ever listen to that story Murr read on Escape Pod? The one about being stuck in an elevator. Scott didn't open his eyes, but nodded.
Stuck in an elevator with Mandy Patinkin. By Kitty Myers.
Scott recited a line from the story.
I'm not a Grim Reaper in real life, but I play one on TV. Good story.
Yeah, I love Mandy Patinkin. Ever since Princess Bride. Scott had leaned his head back again, not looking at me.
What's your point?
That was a good question. I didn't have a point. I was just rambling. But then I realized I did have a point. Mandy Patinkin played Death on television, and he turned out to be Death in that story. And here you are, one of my favorite authors, a dealer of horror and death, and we're stuck on an elevator together. Scott never raised his head, but he opened his right eye enough to look over at me.
You think I'm here to kill you?
The humor had left his voice for the moment. He closed his one open eye, not waiting for me to respond. No, of course not. The elevator just being stuck, it just reminded me of... never mind. I reached up and pressed the door open button once more. Nothing happened. I hesitated before flipping the red alarm switch. I looked at the switch. Reminds me of those old pull-down red fire alarm switches from elementary school. I always wanted to pull down that freaking handle. Without opening his eyes, Scott laughed.
I pulled one of those fuckers when I was 9. I got this blue dye all over my hand. Ran all the way home because I knew they were going to bust me.
He continued laughing, waiting for me to join in. I could only stand there, finger an inch away from the alarm switch, staring slack-jawed at Scott Sigler. Scott opened his right eye again. Seeing my expression, he stopped laughing.
You didn't say that out loud, did you?
He waited a moment.
I hate it when that happens.
Fuck. Me.
Sorry, PG. Looks like we have a bit of a problem.
I reached over and flipped the alarm. Nothing happened. This can't be my time to die. Can it? Scott Sigler opened both eyes, stood straight up, and crossed his arms.
How the fuck would I know?
Because you're Death. You're Death, aren't you? Just like that Mandy Patinkin story. I've been listening to Scott Sigler's novels for 3 months straight. Hell, I just finished Earthcore this morning. All 3 of his books deal with death. I backed up against the side wall, trying to place as much distance between Scott and myself as I could.
You are Death. You're not really Scott. You're just taking on a form I can understand.
Don't be a dumbass.
Faster than humanly possible, Scott was in my face, one strong hand gripping my cheeks and chin, forcing my eyes to stare into his. He used his other arm to pin me against the side wall of the elevator.
Now, I'm not some figment of your imagination, some metaphysical construct to allow your pitiful little mind to comprehend Death as some dark figure arriving to take you away from this plane of existence. Look into my eyes, PG.
I tried to turn away, to push him away. I slammed my fist against his arm, the arm that had pinned me against the wall of the car, but he was immovable. No! I stomped down with my right foot on top of his left, but it elicited no response.
Look!
I submitted. I looked into Scott's eyes, and they became a conduit to another world. I gasped. Through his eyes, I saw a room I recognized. It was my grandparents' house in Virginia. I saw my grandfather, dying of cancer, half his weight, breathing weakly, just as he had moments before he died 15 years before. The room changed, and I saw a room I had imagined only weeks before. I saw Perry Dawsey, from Infection, sitting near his father, who was dying of cancer.
Death is not some allegory. Death is a living, breathing monster that seeps into you, infecting every cell of your being until you're no longer there.
I shuddered, and the room changed again. My viewpoint hovered like an ESPN camera suspended over a football field. But this field wasn't mowed and lined for football. It was overgrown with weeds, and below me sat the wreckage of an accident. And to the side, some 20 feet away from the car, I saw somebody I knew. A sister of an old girlfriend. What was her name? Laura. Laura sat in the grass, crying hysterically. The camera, my eyes, it fell from the sky, all the way down into the wreckage until I could see the body of the 21-year-old girl Laura had killed in a drunk driving accident. The scene, it transformed, changing into an image I created in my own mind while listening to Earthcore. My breathing became labored as I watched Connell scream at God over the death of his beloved wife, Corey, crushed by the Cadillac driven by a drunken New Year's Eve driver. As I watched, unable to pull away, Scott pulled his arm off my chest and then leaned in, hard, slamming my back against the mirrored wall behind me. I heard the sound of breaking glass as Scott shouted at me.
You think I'm some fucking charon here to boat your ass across the river Acheron? Death is the unexpected blow, the strike of lightning that changes your life forever.
My heart was beating hard and fast. I felt my mouth open in a scream, but no sound emerged.
Look deeper. Look!
Connell and his crushed vehicle faded from view, only to be replaced by a large cavern full of roctopi and silver bugs, crawling all over each other, filling a cavern, overflowing that cavern, spilling over into a tunnel, heading up, up, forever up. I tried to pull back from the sight, up the tunnel to escape the roctopi and the silver bugs that drove the roctopi forward. I pulled back, back, back until I exploded from the dark passage into sunlight, the sunlight outside of a mountain. A mountain I immediately knew in my bones was Mount Fitzroy in Argentina. That's not real. It's just a story.
You just don't get it, do you?
The roctopi rushed out of the tunnel, at first flailing and scattering out in all directions, and then the silverbugs came, many more silverbugs than ever described in Earthcore, flowing like a tidal wave down the mountain, leading the roctopi in search of the race of beings that destroyed their ship and outpost in the mountains to the north. The scene faded, only to be replaced by a forest I somehow knew to be in the United States. Idyllic, serene, except for the fact I could not sense any animals, any signs of life. Yet, there was something very much alive in these woods. There was movement. From underneath a pile of leaves, something erupted. A creature defined only by my imagination. One of the hatchlings from Infection. A pyramid with three long, spindly legs. The abomination jumped forward, rushing to the east. Against my will, I followed the creature's progress as it moved disjointedly, yet inexorably, towards something I could already sense in the distance. The hatchling, with its spasmodic gait, pressed forward up a steep, steep hill, weaving inhumanly between trees and rocks until it reached the crest of a hill. And there it was, a new construct, with at least 20 hatchlings completing its construction. A dark archway that could only be used for one thing. to open the gateway to the alien planet to provide millions of 8-foot-tall armored creatures safe entry to our planet. Scott spoke through bared teeth.
Death is a dream that brings forgetfulness to the world.
Suddenly, the gateway was completed, and a blue light emanated from its center. The hatchlings bobbed up and down, waiting, anticipating. A huge clawed foot escaped the gateway, finding a foothold on the forest floor, but this time, with no one to stop it from climbing through. This isn't real. It can't be real. I tore my eyes away from Scott's face. Scott let go of my face and removed his arm from my chest.
Do you understand? Finally?
I nodded. You are Scott Sigler, and you are Death.
In the flesh, baby. Call me Kali, Orcas, or Kalyak, Osiris, whatever. They all work.
For the first time in my life, my religious studies degree was worth something. I understood exactly what Scott was saying.
You are the destroyer of worlds.
Oh, yes! And I'm bringing the pain, my man. One violent penis-severing, platinum knife-ripping, knuckle-crunching, skull-bashing story at a time.
So many images from Scott's stories flashed through my brain, and I finally saw them for what they truly were. Your stories, they are real.
Just you wait and see, junkie.
With that, Scott popped me in the chest with the back of his hand like I was his old, long-lost friend. This time, his simple blow dropped me like a sack of potatoes under the carpeted floor of the elevator.
If I were you, PG, I'd stay away from Ohio, Michigan, and Central South America for the foreseeable future.
The elevator began moving again.
Scott raised his bottle of MGD to his lips, bottle that had magically reappeared in his hand, and he killed the rest of it as the elevator climbed. 10. 11. 12. Scott waved a hand, and the light behind the 12 extinguished itself. The elevator continued past the 12th floor.
The doors opened. Scott smiled at the large security guard standing just beyond the open elevator door.
What's up, brother?
The burly man looked first at Scott, and then to me, unconscious, but breathing normally on the elevator floor.
What the hell happened here?
Scott took a swig from his bottle of beer that had magically refilled itself.
Well,
Scott looked at the guard's name tag.
Rock, he's been drinking some of those pansy-ass microbrews all night.
Scott rubbed his chin with one hand as he looked down at me. He leaned in towards Rock, who stood at least 8 inches taller than the slender writer god of death.
It appears,
looking down at my unmoving form,
that he has passed out. I keep telling him he should be drinking good old American macro brews, created, cared for, and delivered by our all-American union laborers.
Scott exited the elevator, leaving my unconscious form for the confused chief of security. And as Scott walked away, he looked back at me one last time.
Sharing the pain, one junkie at a time. No doubt about it.
You are listening to Death, Taxes, and Scott Sigler by P.G. Holyfield. Special thanks to J.C. Hutchins, author of Seventh Son, Book 1, Descent. Music in this short story, familiar to you all, is Heaven's Alive by Lacuna Coil, courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com.
Last episode, I said that T-1 would be two short stories set in the land of Cairn. Judging by the word count of Seeker, I think Seeker will be the only one I include in T-1. Seeker is actually the first chapter of another Land of Cairn novel I've started, but it is self-contained enough to release on its own, and events that happen in Seeker greatly affect one character in particular in Murder at Avedon Hill, so I wanted to read that for you before I start the podcast novel. So have a good one, and I hope you'll join me again next time. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to a T-minus episode for Murder at Avedon Hill. Murder at Avedon Hill is a podcast novel written by P.G. Holyfield and read by the author. Thanks for listening. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this novel and the author. Music in this podcast generously provided by Shira Common through Magnatune.com. Magnatune.com. They are not evil. This podcast is copyright 2007 PG Holyfield and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 2.5 license.